You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. On this week's book review, we're exploring some of July's releases, including a novel, a memoir, and some poetry, as picked by Kathy Rensenbrink, contributing editor to The Bookseller and author of The Last Act of Love. And Kathy joins me in the studio now. Welcome to the show. We're going to start with our novel, The Tidal Zone by Sarah Moss. First of all, I guess, explain a bit about the storyline of this book.
This is a book about a family who live in the Midlands, a stay-at-home dad called Adam, a daughter called Emma, and then they have two daughters, Miriam and Rose, and one day Miriam collapses at school, stops breathing, is rushed to hospital, and nobody really knows what's happened, why it happened, or how to stop it happening again. It's just a really brilliant novel that absolutely captures that moment of crisis and is good at both the sort of the big dramatic action, but also is it just really wonderfully pins the small sort of small currents and rhythms of domestic life, of marriage with children.
And after this moment of crisis, as you mentioned, what then happens? Does it focus on the relationships between the family members as time goes on? I mean, where do we go from there?
Well, initially, we're in what the author describes as hospital time, where Miriam is in hospital. She doesn't seem to be in immediate danger. And that's all very well evoked, the way that the she's 15, but she's in a ward with lots of other younger children. And one of the parents at one point reflects that it must be a bit like being in prison, and that you don't ask what the other people are there for. So she's surrounded often by very poorly children who might have been very poorly since their birth. You know, there's a conversation with one woman who's, I think, the first time her son came in for an operation, he was 2 weeks old. So this notion of, I know a lot of the book is about the National Health Service, I think, because the mother, Emma, is a doctor. So she's an overworked doctor already. But it's also about how being a doctor doesn't really particularly help you when there's something wrong with one of your own children. So we're in hospital time. It's all about how the both parents are coping with it, how the little sister, Rose, is coping with the fact that her elder sister isn't there. This feeling that they should just be able to be told what's wrong. They should be able to be told how to stop it happening again, that there should be some certainty, which we never really achieve, and then learning to live with that uncertainty.
Because I guess there's also that tension, I don't think it's giving too much away to say that Rose could have the illness as well if it's a hereditary thing, the younger daughter. Is that right?
That's right, yes. That finding out what's happening with Miriam also has implications for Rose. And then there's quite a lot of backstory with Adam, the father's own family, and what might have or might not have happened to his mother. So it's a really rich and complex novel, very layered, but also possibly because the drama's done so very well, it's quite a fast, speedy, tense read. I did describe it as literally breathtaking, in that I quite often did seem to think I had to remind myself to breathe again. Right. So I would just stop. But it's so good. She's such a good writer. She writes so well about family and medicine. And I think possibly almost the main thing I would say about this book is the absolute content. You know, all of the great questions of life and death are here, but also the sort of intricate tapestry of daily life is so well woven.
I mean, you mentioned that it obviously talks a lot about the NHS, and The Independent has called this kind of a state of a nation novel. What kind of painting do you think it gives of modern society in this country? I mean, is it a pretty terrible image that we get?
I think it's quite realistic in that you see a family just sort of trying to muddle through. Adam, the father, is a sort of, well, I don't think he even really would describe himself as an academic. He did a PhD. He picks up occasional bits of teaching of first year students. You know, he describes that he did a PhD and got himself into debt long before he'd realised that there just weren't going to be the sort of jobs anymore that people like him used to want to do. So he's a stay-at-home dad. Emma is a doctor. She's continually tired, continually exhausted. There's a tension between them that predates whatever happens to Miriam, because Adam sort of secretly suspects that she likes being at work better than she likes being at home with the family. I bet that's familiar to anyone, I think. There are so many moments of personal recognition reading this book, I must say, both about how you as a parent worrying about your children. So you worry about them and you worry about worrying about them, and how you think about risk, but also just the utter complex nature of a relationship, a marriage, once children are involved, and the different priorities and the sort of the shared priorities, and the, you know, what happens to your own identity when you have other people to think about.
The Title Zone by Sarah Moss is out now, published by Granta. Let's move on now to Undying, a love story by Michelle Faber. The Dutch-born writer, who now resides in Scotland, is known for his fiction, but he's just released this set of poems in memory of his wife, Eva, who died after battling cancer in 2014. Cathy, I guess it's obviously after the death of his wife. What are these poems reflecting on?
Well, they're reflecting on life and love and death, really, all the big subjects. It's very interesting because he says in the foreword that he used to joke that at the rate he wrote poems, he'd need to live until he was 90 before having enough for the collection. And one of the themes of the book really is perhaps that death, witnessing death, experiencing the end of, you know, experiencing a love affair that is terminated by the death of the loved one, does seem perhaps to call for poetry in some way. And it does seem perhaps poetry is suited to grief, because this is a very powerful collection. But again, he traces all the big things, but also it's in the little details. There's a poem about when he cuts her hair and describes it as the most intimate of all the intimate things they've done. And it feels, it does feel like a social history. You know, he talks about their relationship, he talks about the clothes she used to like to wear, the friends she used to have, the way that she liked dancing, he didn't like dancing. It's, again, it's an incredibly rich collection. You get an awful lot of emotion and intellectual interest per word, if you like.
And when it comes to the language, I mean, I mentioned that he's better known, I guess, for his fiction. Do you get a sense that he is a novel writer writing poems? I mean, is there a kind of a way that either the language or the way he puts them together feels a bit novelistic?
That's an interesting question. I mean, you definitely feel he's telling a story with these poems, that it's the storytelling that is of primary importance. Possibly why I like them so much, actually, because I'm a prose reader rather than a poetry reader, which is a very silly and simplistic generalisation to make. But yes, these are poems written for someone like me who wants a sense of story. I find it interesting as well, because I don't know the chronology, but the last, his most recent novel, The Book of Strange New Things, is a very interesting, rich novel, but that has a marriage at its centre, and I haven't worked out the chronology of whether or not he was writing that book as his, you know, as his wife was already, as Eva was already ill, or not. So I think that I think it's always interesting to think about a writer's work and the links between the work. But I think these poems are quite an interesting companion piece to read to The Book of Strange New Things in what they say about marriage and love.
Undying by Michelle Faber is out now, published by Canongate. Finally, let's move on to Dadlands, a memoir of Lieutenant Colonel Tom Carew, as written by his daughter, Keggy Carew. Cathy, tell us a little bit about the story. As it sounds, it's kind of amazing, this story.
This is an amazing story. It's an amazing book. It's a great, big, huge book, covers loads of territory. I use territory in an advised way. So it's called Dadlands. The author's father, Tom, was a very charismatic man. His wartime colleagues called him the Mad Irishman. He was written up as Colonel X. He'd parachuted into France with the SOE during the war, led guerrilla resistance in France and then in Burma. He was rather less successful, possibly, as a peacetime soldier, and less successful as a civilian, and had his shortcomings as a father. He and Keggy's mother broke up and he married someone else. And this stepmother then, the author feels, really put the kibosh on her relationship with her father. So it's at the point when the stepmother dies that she thinks this is going to herald a new age in the father and daughter relationship. And then it's at that moment that her father begins to lose his memory.
So that's kind of the framing narrative.
That's the framing of the narrative, yes. Right. So she now can physically get close to him in a way she couldn't when the stepmother was alive, stopping everything. But it's at that point that his memory starts to go. But equally at that point, she's freed from the stepmother observance. She gets into the attic and finds all these trunks full of all his stuff, and he is delighted that she's interested. So he sends her away with cardboard boxes, saying he writes on them with a marker, you know, Keggy is now the custodian of Tom's war. And so she finds out about him. So the book is such an interesting mix. I don't think I've ever read anything quite like it. Such a curious patchworking of, you know, really quite carefully researched military history. So she spends a lot of time in the National Archives. It's not just a kind of a, you know, cut and paste job on this is what my dad told to me. You feel it's been very carefully done. So lots of military history cut with the descriptions of her relationship with her father. As he is very, the tenses are very difficult with this because there's so many things happening at different times. So I won't say as he is now, but he has now later died. So we find out by the end of the book he has died, but it's not really a sequential narrative. So at the beginning of the book, there's report, there were conversations between Keggy and Tom, sort of as they are now, and that bit alone is extremely fascinating. That sense of a person losing a memory of who they are. So he goes from someone who's very certain of his own identity to, there's a bit where he looks in the mirror and he's confused that he's got a beard. He doesn't understand why it's there and who put this there. And his daughter suggests that maybe it grew by itself, and he laughs, you know, don't be ridiculous. So there's lots of very poignant details about that. And then also quite a lot of family history, going back both sides of the family. So it's extremely lengthy. I must say, I still don't know really whether it almost should be as long as it is, because part of me...
How long is it? Are we talking...
Oh, no, it's not...
Not a huge tome.
No, it's not huge, but in general, I think books should be shorter, and my fingers itch to cross bits out of them. So I do have that itching sensation with this book, but I'm not, I almost don't trust my own thoughts, because having said that, there is something spectacular about the range in which it covers. And there's a very, it's a pleasing sort of, you know, you don't feel that the author has edited herself particularly, which is quite pleasing. So on the one hand, there's quite a lot of, I mean, quite adolescent grumbling and, you know, a bit of naming and shaming of other family members. It's interesting because when I talk about memoir, I always say you shouldn't write a memoir for revenge. I definitely don't think, that's, this author hasn't been thinking about that. There's quite a lot of, quite often I read it and I was thinking like, gosh, this person's probably still alive. Are they going to read this and what are they going to think about it? But having said that, it makes it rather gleeful read in that sense. You do feel like a fly in the wall who's been given rather a lot. I'm wondering how they all will feel about it. I'm fascinated by who the reader is of this book, because I can imagine lots of what we would think of as to be your military historian types.
I was going to say, yeah, because it's got this kind of mix, as you say, of kind of, yeah, military history, quite yes. Well researched, and then all of this family.
That's right. So you can imagine all these sorts of people that want to read about Burma, not necessarily being the same sort of people that want to read several chapters about how she still hates her stepmother, even though this woman has now been dead for quite a long time.
Right, so, <okay. laughs>
yes, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think that there's so much in it about fathers, about daughters, about identity, the relationship between them. It's sort of endlessly rich. And I'm still thinking about it. I'm still thinking about it all the time. I don't know whether I will get more conclusions about it in the future, but I would highly recommend it.
Dadlands by Keggy Karou will be published by Chatto and Windus on July 28th. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll talk documentaries with Elizabeth Wood from the Dockhouse Cinema here in London. But for now, thanks very much for listening and goodbye.